Hello. Thank you again for joining us. It's Neighbors in Need, and we welcome back into the studio Jennifer Farringer from NCADD. Last time that we were talking, and it wasn't too long ago, we were talking about the focus of the silent addiction, that being gambling. And after our interview, you and I just got to talking about opioid use, which we hear a lot in the news now. And you were saying there's a lot of positive things that are happening.
On a statewide basis, we are starting to put monies into funding prevention, treatment, and recovery response specifically to this issue. So this is not to detract from the huge numbers, the deaths of people that are near and dear to us, but instead to say the community is responding. So on the state level, we've got a recent expansion of several services. Locally, for example, we were just awarded a community coalition/collaboration grant that'll be working with the 9 counties in the economic development region. There has been funding now put forward toward an open access clinic, and that will be run, staffed collaboratively by multiple Monroe County treatment providers. The intention of that one is to be a point of first access for someone wanting to get treatment, and or for law enforcement who has someone in front of them that, you know, they know they can't arrest their way out of the problem. So it would be for that person that wants treatment. So you would bring them to open access where it could be determined what is the appropriate level of care for that individual. And then a treatment slot can be located. The person can be transported, because that's part of this grant, transported to that site. Insurance barriers will be negotiated. You know, so again, it's intended to pave the way and to really open up that blockage that we've had for immediate access. Because this is all about when someone needs treatment, they need it today, not in 3 weeks, not in two months. They need it today. They need immediate access.
Let's start from the beginning. First, when we hear opioid, what are we referring to?
Yeah, it's a broad category. So the category of opioids is not only heroin, which all our attention is going toward, but it's also prescription pain med. So this isn't about saying we have no use in society for prescription pain meds. No, it's about rethinking about how we take and how prescription pain meds are prescribed, because we're in a situation now where the number of opioid, and that's pain medications and heroin, are enormous. They've surpassed the HIV/AIDS deaths at its highest peak in 95. You know, so we're out of control. We've got too many opioid pain meds on the street. So what we're trying to do is encourage physicians, prescribers to be much, much more conservative in their prescribing practices. So again, it's not to say there's never any use for an opioid pain med. You better have that when you come out of a surgery or whatever. You better have that, but have it as conservative as possible, not these long-term chronic prescribing.
And that's where we got to this point, not intentionally doctors prescribing. They want to take care of and alleviate pain of their patients, but in turn, involuntarily, they created, I don't want to point the finger, but it created this epidemic that we are now dealing with and trying to get our hands in control of it.
And I would say not so much the physicians. I really think they are not the villain here, not at all. It's big pharma really putting down or minimizing the addiction properties of these pain medications and encouraging the physician to solely focus on pain to the extent they got pain scheduled as a fifth vital sign. And pain is not a vital sign. So again, encouraging, CDC is doing this on a national level too, trying to encourage physicians, we're trying to encourage patients, have a different conversation about pain. So instead of going into the doctor's office or being in the hospital and having to rate your level of pain 1 through 10, that's a fairly subjective rating. Why not have a conversation like, how do you experience pain? How is pain impacting your life? Is it preventing you from doing what you want to do? And the rationale behind that is we all experience pain on so many different levels. High tolerance, low tolerance, everything in between. And then have that next level of conversation. If this is prescribed, understand that there's risks associated with addictions. And maybe if chronic pain is involved, let's think about some non-opioid things like alternative therapies, like chiropractic or acupuncture or massage. There's a variety of other things that we could do that would be, well, it wouldn't put us in this place where we're at now.
And we're all wired differently. Some are more, have more addictive, you know, wiring personalities than others. So whereas one person might become addicted to the pain, you know, reliever, another person may not. So it isn't, you're right. It isn't a black and white, rate your pain 1 through 10.
Right.
Okay. So now let's go to, because we know that this encompasses everybody and anybody.
Yes.
At one point in time in life, it was a stereotype of, well, they made bad choices. They chose to take drugs. They chose to get on heroin. Now it's evolved into, how did I get here? How did my son get here? How did my daughter get here? If you are dealing with that loved one right now that you know is struggling and the signs are there, I feel like sometimes as parents, and gosh, I don't know how I would react, I may inadvertently enable my child too. Oh, they're stealing from me? Well, then maybe let me give them more money, because just the motherly nature of let me protect them. What would you advise a parent should do instead of turning that blind eye and accidentally enabling them to continue?
I think the biggest thing is having the conversation early and often
from
the beginning, and not just about this category we're talking about today, about opioids, around any drugs of abuse, to include alcohol, tobacco, e-cigs. I mean, it's really important to have the conversation early to build that trust, that ongoing conversation, but also to recognize the signs. You know, if there's all of a sudden a shift in terms of peer group, you know, I'm hanging with different people now, you know, what's that all about? Or grades have dropped significantly. You know, any big major shift in a young person's life should be paid attention to. And if you get to the point that you really suspect, and be observant too. You know, it's some parents will take the stance of, my child's room is their private domain. No, they're in your house and you have every right to know what's in that room.
Love it. You're right.
To include paraphernalia and stashes of drugs. And if you were to find that, confront in a confrontation way and encourage and insist on getting an evaluation to find out, you know, to intervene early on with that child.
I think there's a lot of fear with that. No matter if you're going to do it in a nice, kind way, the fear, I would only imagine, is that they're going to shut down, they're going to storm out of my house, and I'll never see them again.
And it is a fear. And it is a fear. So we don't want to go the other, we used to say 10, 15 years ago, the tough love thing. And I don't know that that's such a, in fact, that's not a great idea with this drug of abuse, because you do that, the tough love stance was just, okay, you're out of the house. If you won't do A, or you won't do this, then you're out of the house. What happened in too many cases was the child, the young person, would then take yet again. And that next time might be the last time. You know, this drug is too immediately potentially fatal. You know, and I don't think you want to go down that road either. But to have a confrontation, we say carefrontation. I care about you. I love you. I need, you know, for me, you know, go whatever it takes to get the person. If it's not a treatment site, a counselor in the community that is proficient at working with young people. And there's a lot of people that will refer. So we're a primary referral source in terms of calling in to getting information on where to refer, where to reach out. And then to understand, too, that the family is going to go through the same spiraling chaos, not the physical dependence, but that chaos. And it's important for them to get help and support through this journey.
And now, as we become more aware of this issue, there are places to go to. So the first step, maybe we could call you guys and then you can help us navigate.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. In fact, we set up now on our website, if you go to ncadd-ra.org and you go to the menu bar under news and resources, go under resources and scroll down and you'll see a whole area devoted to heroin and prescription pain meds. And they're direct links to a variety of local, state, and national sources. So, for example, one takes you directly to the Monroe County Treatment Provider Template that we created a decade ago. We continue to update biannually. Another one takes you to recovery wraparound services. So this would be a good thing for parents to know, too. A good example of that is Recovery Fitness, you know, a place where you can refer kids to, not kids, but 18 and over in this case, to do a variety of activities in a sober community. And it's a huge variety of activities. On that referral site at NCADD, you'll also see, and it's NCADD-RA to get specifically to our site, you'll also see a locator for Suboxone prescribers. So that's a medication that will help someone get off opioids. And there's a list of certified physicians that people can go to. Okay. So there's many, many resources in that particular area of our website.
There is an audience. There are people scrolling through articles about this. You'll always see comments saying, okay, we're pouring millions and millions of dollars into this. Yeah. Why is our taxpayer money used for this when it could be used for other things? What do you say to those people who are still really strongly feeling that?
I'd say it's a community problem. And in this issue, if there has to be a silver lining, and there's very few with this horrible, horrible issue, and the deaths of young people, young adults mounting all the time, but if there is a silver lining, it's for the first time, I think that stigma issue might be a little less. The reason being is with this particular issue, the addiction to prescription pain meds in particular, it's crossed all demographic boundaries. It's okay. Impacting urban, suburban, rural equally. It's impacting across gender, across ethnicities. It's impacting everybody, all economic strata. I mean, there are no limitations. Mm. And in terms of monies being spent, it's honestly a drop in the bucket when you look at it and compare it to any other disease. And I think that's where the language has to get.
Okay.
That this is a disease like every other disease. I think where we get lost in the weeds with addiction is when someone picks up it the very first time, that was a choice. But as soon as someone crosses the line into addiction, the brain, actually they call it, there's a switch in the brain, not a switch specifically,
yes.
But like a chemical switch, mm-hmm. that choice then is removed from you. You have this intense craving and an actual physical need to pursue that drug. Then take a look at this topic that we're talking about. No one typically that's finding themselves now addicted to heroin, and now I think the percentage is about 75-80% of those that are addicted to heroin got there by their initial addiction to prescription pain meds.
Okay.
So that's a very different
yeah.
scenario. That could be the young person on a football team that gets an injury that's prescribed legitimately pain meds, but instead of being prescribed a very short term to get them off their initial injury, what we were hearing is being prescribed 70-80 OxyContin. Now, that shouldn't be happening anymore because of laws that were passed last June, but I still hear that in the community.
Okay.
So that's our big problem. You know, these,
so that
these
first,
huge
that
amounts.
First choice that you referred to might be the choice of after a football injury or after
and
a soccer injury.
And yeah. that whole choice conversation, you can just put that aside
yeah.
because it really doesn't apply here because you had an injury, you went to your physician prescribed you an opioid
yeah.
legitimately for the pain, but the problem wasn't the prescribing of the opioid, it was the excessive amount.
Yes.
You know, and to give you the idea, just a numbers on what I mean by excessive, when you look at the United States population, we have about 5% of population of the world. But we use, or we have out and about 80% of the world's OxyContin, about
wow.
95% of the world's hydrocodone or Vicodin.
Wow.
And that gives you kind of a
yeah.
sense of what we're talking about. We're talking about vast amounts of prescription pain meds.
Is big pharma more of an issue, an American issue, than it is around the world?
It's an issue everywhere, but certainly for this one, the numbers show that we are far
mm-hmm.
above. Canada's right behind us. Australia's fairly close. You know, Germany,
wow.
there's others that are kind of marching up there. But big pharma is an issue. And it's the deceptive practices. I know our attorney general last March, as recently as last March, fined one of the pharmaceutical companies, the makers of Opana, which is an even stronger opioid than OxyContin, for still encouraging their reps when they go out to physicians. You know, minimize the addiction part and emphasize the pain relief part.
Scary.
We can't do that anymore.
It sounds like day one with cigarettes.
Yeah.
Doctors used to prescribe cigarettes to their patients.
Exactly. It's purposeful misinformation campaign.
Wow.
And we're trying to counteract that in a variety of ways.
And it's good that there's all this talk about it. We're open. We recognize the problem. Now, I know this might be a little bit challenging because everybody deals with recovery a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. But if you're in knee deep with this, you have a loved one or you yourself, it sounds overwhelming, the recovery, you know, process. Can you give us averages, average time of recovery or step by step what you need to do just to kind of tell people you can do it?
First of all, I think we don't spend near enough time emphasizing the health and hope around recovery.
Okay.
There are many people in the community that are enjoying and living in recovery, mm-hmm. but it is a struggle. So the first step, obviously, is getting to a site where you can get assessed, getting the appropriate level of care, going through treatment, and then being surrounded, literally surrounded with recovery support services. Mm-hmm. And that's where we lack. You know, when you think, again, I like to compare it back to another disease. As an example, say a woman goes through breast cancer. She has chemo. She has radiation. Perhaps she has surgery. After the surgery, it's not the physician or the hospital doesn't say, well, see, I have a nice life. You know, you're surrounded by a variety of services to help you maintain, in that case, the recovery, make sure the cancer doesn't come back. Same thing here. You know, we need to surround someone with the health and hope of recovery. And that's why organizations such as Recovery Fitness are so helpful. So in that scenario, someone would go through treatment, get connected perhaps with one of the peer navigators or the Recovery Fitness folks, and they can learn to kind of rebuild their lives and surround themselves with a sober community that's doing all sorts of fun, neat activities. I mean, they do everything from rock climbing to kayaking to hiking the high peaks to hiking Genesee Valley.
So you can live life again.
You can live life again. You create a new community of health.
Okay.
But it is a process.
Yeah.
It's a process. And it's scary. So what is the person that's in throes of addiction, substance use disorder, they're scared to death that they'll experience the pain of withdrawal. And that's a real thing. I mean, that's a very, very real thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that fear of experiencing the withdrawal would lead someone likely to keep medicating or keep taking the drug to not experience that. But you get to the point when you say that, you know, my life is just unmanageable. You know, it's not a life anymore. And you go through detox to get that out of your system, go through treatment, use one of the medications perhaps that are out there. There's several medications that can help someone through this process, get the counseling that you need, again, the support, and then surround yourself, or the family can surround that person with a variety of recovery services.
Oh, Jennifer, thank you so much. NCADD-RA.org is the website to go to. Everything that we talked about today is on the website. All the areas that you can go to, all the outlets that you can go to seek advice is all right there. And that's what you guys do. You help people.
We do.
And you create the noise and awareness about this.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for what you do day in and day out. And we ran out of time, so we'll have to bring you back in because, again, I feel like we have more to talk about.
Yeah.
So if you have any questions, please reach out to Jennifer and everybody there at NCADD-RA.org.
Thanks, Sandy.
Thank you.